Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Recording. Okay, it says that it is. All right, welcome back, everybody.
Zoom keeps... Sorry.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Ground. Oh, my God. My goodness.
You go ahead and cut that.
I'm going to leave it in there because he's going to find it funny. Welcome to another episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. We are coming back again with another episode that I feel like is not only time, like season specific, but it's also remarkably relevant to kind of the conversation we've been having. Today's topic is going to be ground hunting. And Brett Mashburn and myself, Brett Mashburn and I, my grandma be killing me right now, are flying solo tonight. But we've got a guest that I don't feel like gets enough credit for what he does. We've got a legend amongst us. You may know him by the name Catman. I know him as the guy that if there's ever a zombie apocalypse, I'm going to his house because I guarantee he's got food stashed somewhere and the ability to get more of it. Dude, welcome to another episode. Thanks for carving time out of your busy schedule and talking to us.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So you guys won't know this because you're not privy to what happens after an episode happens. Once we hit end to the episode, first time I had Catman on, we talked for about an hour and a half on the podcast, and then we stayed up until almost midnight. I don't know if you remember this, and we were talking on the phone about different trees and pictures of different trees, and we were texting them back and forth, and I was like, dude, I got to go to sleep. And you're like, oh, man, yeah, you probably do, don't you? And so you are a woodsman. You're the guy that models woodsmanship for a lot of other people. And I've learned a lot from your YouTube channel. So I'm just going to start off by saying thanks, man. And I'm glad you're still making content.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm just doing what I love. I'm glad some people can get something out of it.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. In fact, your oak video, your how to identify different oaks, I probably, with Brett's nodding his head right now, I bet you I've watched that three times. And you inspired me to go and buy this book. Oh, it's phased out. You can't see it because it doesn't have a face next to it. There it is. Native Trees of the Southeast. And whenever I go scouting now in places that I'm not familiar, I will take this book with me and a little Catman video whenever I have cell service and I'm off to the races.
That's cool. I think I've heard of that book before.
Oh, it's so good. It really is good. You can get it on eBay for like $15. Like, yeah. This is brand new for $15. But, dude, man, before we get into the topic, let's talk a little bit about what you got planned. What's your fall look like?
A lot of killing, mainly does. I've got a couple of nice bucks I've located that we'll see if I can keep up with them. But I've done a lot of driving around, walking around, scouting, hung a few cameras. Mostly going to stay in Tennessee. I've already been to Kentucky once, and the license is kind of expensive, so I'll try to go back if I get time. And then probably Alabama or Mississippi later on in January.
Dadgum, man. But, you know, y'all get such a liberal limit there in Tennessee. I was sitting here thinking, man, he's cutting himself short.
Yeah, we need Tennessee. It. We need it in some places. I was riding around yesterday in the vicinity of public, just, you know, kind of laying eyes on deer that I might find on public later into the rut. And you can go down certain roads and the browse line in the woods is insane. There's not a leaf on the bushes below about 4 feet, and it's like a solid wall where it's green above and gray below, and you can see like 50 yards through the woods.
No deer kidding. Feet
and everything. Yeah. That's not everywhere. That's just certain areas.
Are those like urban areas, or you can say no if you don't have to answer that?
A lot of it, well, suburbs. It's right. Not like downtown in any city or anything, but it's like residential areas. There's farmland mixed in too. You don't see a lot of row crops in that situation because I don't think they could get them to grow. But there's a lot of like hay fields, cow pastures, and stuff like that, and then subdivisions, mixed use. Deer like that kind of stuff.
I would be remiss if I didn't talk about. Can y'all still hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I just bumped my USB and it flickered for a second. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a shift you made, maybe last year, or the year before, and to ask you kind of the origin. The Catman I grew up with, and that sounds silly to say, but the Catman I followed, when it walked out, it died. If it was legal, it died. And you started targeting some big deer on public land. What caused that shift? I'm curious.
Just killing a few decent deer and wanting to kill a bigger one. And I still, if it walks out, it dies. It's just not a little buck so much anymore. I mean, I have killed 2 little scrub bucks already this year, but it was on that depredation hunt up in Indiana. Yep. So that was kind of like kill anything that's eating the crops. But no, sure. as far as burning my tag, we get 2 bucks in Tennessee, and I'll be pretty picky with the first one, and then I'll eat the last tag if I don't get a, you know, I don't want to have to pass up a giant towards the end of season because I burned both tags on a half decent buck. So last year I only had one really nice one on camera, and ended up killing him second day of rifle season. But because it was just because I knew that one deer was in the area, and I didn't know if there was any other big ones, I got real picky. I was like, I've already killed 10 does. I'm just gonna wait on a good buck. I was seeing a lot of rut activity, and so I was just sitting it out, passing on deer. But like, I've got like behind me, not the big one, that's a deadhead, but that little one back there, that 10 point, that was a 2-year-old buck I killed three or four years ago. And shot it with my bow about 20 yards. And I mean, that's to talk about, that's potential there. I don't care. Like I wouldn't blame anybody else for shooting him, but I wouldn't shoot him again. Like he's already on my wall now, something bigger.
I could see that.
Get that.
I haven't made it through that bud list yet, but I think I'm creeping up on it. I'm curious, how do you balance targeting big deer in Tennessee where the kind of the pressure is really notorious? And we're not going to go too much further down this. If you guys are listening and you're thinking, well, they said ground hunting, we'll get to that in a second, but I'm just curious. I want to flesh it out. Tennessee's got a lot of pressure on deer for deer. How do you go about
balancing? Especially middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we got Nashville right in the middle. It's very highly populated and got a lot of deer and a lot of turkey. And it's pretty well known for that. So yeah, there's a lot of pressure. I think I hunted 9 counties in Tennessee last year, and I bounce around. Even on one specific WMA, I've got 2 dozen spots I know of that I've scouted, and I might have a camera in a couple of them, or I've hunted them for years. So I'm just bouncing around like all the time. And if somebody moves into a spot, I'll back out and maybe check it later on down. That's actually what happened with the buck I killed last year. He was occasionally on trail camera, and you know, no pattern or anything. You just pass them through once in a while, usually at night. And towards the end of bow season, I started having people show up. Like I got there and I got there one morning and somebody was already in there, which they came in a different way. I didn't see them parked, but they only hunted for like an hour or two and then they left, and then came in there another day and somebody else was in there, and then somebody threw up a pop-up blind and a mock scrape and a trail camera right in the middle of the red oaks where the deer all came through. And I was like, all right, I know there's deer in this area, but I need to stay out there because they're hunting it too much. And so I gave it like a week or two break and came back in second day of rifle season. Cold Sunday morning, beautiful weather. And he showed up right behind a doe. So, I mean, I saw a bunch of deer that morning, but he showed up right behind a doe and had this spot to myself. So I'm back and forth, you know, with the pressure and whatever the deer are doing, the food sources, all that. It all just kind of plays into where I'm going to hunt next.
Right on, man. All right, so let's dive into this. Ground hunting is something that the pendulum swings in life. And whenever it swings, it needs to come back down, and it kind of tries to rest at center. It used to be everybody ground hunted back in the day. And then we started to see tree stands and the emergence of tree stands. And Brett documented last year a hunt in an area that's overlooked that you can't hang from a tree stand. And it kind of kicked this ball down the hill. We didn't even realize it was rolling. And strategies surrounding ground hunting have become a focal point of discussion inside our little SoCo group. And so my question, I guess, can I kind of leave this open-ended, and you can answer this how you want to, but how do you end up using ground game? How does that factor into your decision-making? Is it something that's situational specific as in habitat, or is it just something that you just apply whenever you don't want to climb a tree? How would you describe it?
A little of both. Sometimes, like, especially during gun season, if I got a firearm in my hands, I'm way less likely to climb a tree, because not only is it easier to pull off a shot, but I like to be able to move around, and I will stalk a deer with a rifle. So it's a lot easier to stalk to, you know, 50, 100 yards instead of stalking to 20. So there's that. And then and it's situational. Where am I hunting? Are there any trees that are going to give me a clear shot, or can I see a little better from the ground? Or I'm not sure if I want to sit here and I don't want to have to pack all my stuff up and climb down. So I'll just sit on the ground so I can move if I need to. A lot of my scout hunts, like where I'm kind of scouting, kind of hunting, I will stay on the ground for stuff like that, because I don't really know where I'm going to end up by the end of the day. So it just depends.
On a scale of, like, if you had to pick between hunting from a tree and hunting from the ground, what's your default? Like, which is the one that you find yourself gravitating towards?
During bow season, a tree, and during gun season, from the ground. But it really depends. Definitely do a lot more ground hunting than climbing once rifle opens. And then during bow season, I prefer to be elevated. But then again, it just depends on the situation.
I had a question for you. Listening to that, have you ever hunted from the ground with your bow and taken deer, or had any close encounters?
Well, with the bow?
Yeah, from the ground.
Yeah, last weekend. I've killed a few. I don't do a lot of, like, I had a nice buck a few years ago at full draw, 25 yards on the ground. I was still hunting in the rain. And he had a free block in his vitals and busted me. But it's mainly does. I don't think I've killed a good buck from the ground with my bow yet. It's just I don't do it as much. But yeah, just last weekend in Kentucky, I was sitting in a little strip of trees in the middle of a big grass field, just watching deer all evening. And I had one come almost close enough to shoot, and then she started feeding away from me. And so I just crawled out there, kicked my Crocs off and wore socks to make less noise. And she was, whatever was growing under that grass, she really liked. She never picked her head up. I was like, she's going to bust me. I'm not getting a shot. And I just kept creeping closer. And I got to about 25 yards and drew my bow back, and she still didn't pick her head up. And I shot her just standing in the middle of a field. I was like, wow, I didn't think that deer was going to let me get that close. She didn't have a clue.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels like hunting from the ground would be something that wouldn't be a bow season tactic, just because, at least in my neck of the woods, and this might be entirely different on where you hunt, but typically speaking, it feels like for me, most of my, hey, quit. Sorry, my puppy's acting out tonight. Most of the places that I hunt in early season, the winds suck, like really, really badly. Does that factor into that as well? Or is it just simply like you put your back in water and
it does. Yeah, I like windy days better. It's more predictable. But that reminds me, a few years ago, I had a 13-point. I think it was a 13-point. And he looked like a young deer, like maybe 3.5, but probably pushing 130 inches. I never saw him again. I think somebody killed him that season. He was on some real popular ag field public land. But anyways, second day of bow season, I'm sitting on the ground on the bank of this creek. I think I was actually down on a gravel bar, like down by the water level below the bank, and sitting in like a root ball or something, if I remember right. And he came out 60 yards up the creek, and the wind was supposed to be blowing downstream, but it was that like hot, humid, dead wind where it's just kind of doing whatever, pooling, swirling. And he picked his head up and sniffed a couple times and turned around and disappeared and never saw him again. So yeah, the wind sucks sometimes. I mean, that's, and I have that up in a tree too. I hunted that same creek one evening from a tree. I got way up in a sycamore tree, and it was the same humid, dead calm. My scent drops straight down into the creek, and this little yearling buck comes down the bank a ways down and starts walking up the gravel bar. And it's like he hit a wall. He just froze up and then kind of got skittish and turned around and ran back up the bank. So, I mean, the wind is going to suck sometimes regardless. But yeah. I definitely – it's definitely more important on the ground, because you don't have a chance of, in a tree blowing your scent over the deer's head when they come in close. If they're downwind and you're on the ground, they're going to smell you. It's not blowing over them.
Yep.
Does that impact where you ground hunt as well? How do you end up playing thermals from the ground? Because one of the issues I face, and this kind of cost me a deer last year, I guess you could look at it, is I hunted from the ground in an area that there wasn't a really good suitable tree, just because the canopy was one of those where if you got in a tree, you'd see like basically where you climbed. But if you were down low, you could see a good, 30, 40 yards. And it was this really beautiful pinch point, and I'm on the side of this hill. The wind's just pulling into me right at like 9:45. The sun finally creeps over the top. You start to feel those thermals start to shift up that ridge where those deer were going to be. And I used conventional wisdom and left. And as I'm boating away, I get a photo of a doe running right past where I was and a buck running right past where I was. They would have been upwind of me. How do you end up like leveraging that in what you do?
A lot of times I just wing it or go with gut feeling, and sometimes I get totally busted and sometimes it works out perfect. As far as thermals go, like here's a good example of how I approached hunting in my backyard. A couple seasons ago, I had some nice bucks that were hanging around every day. They would come out in a different spot in the field every evening, but they were out there every day, and the velvet hunt comes around. And so I got a tree stand in a walnut tree in the backfield. Actually, on hindsight, I probably could have killed from it, but I played cat and mouse and the deer were always coming out somewhere else. I never killed them that weekend, but I was going out late because if you got a south wind, it's blowing up into the woods where they come from. But if it's not a windy day, you wait till the sun falls behind this ridge. There's a big ridge to the west. Let the sun fall behind that ridge, the thermal start to drop right then. And so you just wait for the wind to die. Pretty much as soon as the wind dies in the evening, it's going to start flowing downhill out of the woods and you can go out there and hunt. So I was going out late, like close to sunset, and trying to put the sneak on these deer. But if I went out any earlier, it would have been blowing up into their bedding. And even if the wind was good, say a north wind coming from the woods, then it's coming over a ridge and over a cedar thicket. And I don't know if you hunt around cedar thickets much, but the wind swirls really bad. And so a good wind is not a good wind. So I was solely hunting on thermals and hunting on the ground in the tall grass, trying to, get myself close to them. And it was like cat and mouse game, but that's one way I would approach the thermal thing, is go out like when the timing's right, when the thermals are actually doing what they're supposed to do.
Less hunting, but a higher odd situation because the winds are predictable.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out there at 3:30 in the afternoon with the wind blowing all over the place when I could go out there at 6:30 and have that cool breeze coming down off the ridge in my face and maybe the deer already on their feet. But it just that's another factor too. If the deer are already up and you can't sneak in, then you're going to have to make something else work, like on a windy day or something.
Sure.
But in the case with my backyard, there's enough fence rows and tree cover to move around pretty good, so it's okay for a ground sneak.
That actually makes me think about a couple areas, Brett, actually. The ability to creep through some of those areas once those thermals change. You know, a lot of the areas that I want to hunt with good thermals, I have to hunt on warmer days because they set up terribly for a north wind.
Yeah.
But like what you were saying, especially you could sit on the, I think I could sit on the water and watch some of those areas and then push my way in once the thermals start to kind of shift a little bit.
Yeah. When you're coming in by water a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I've really started to leverage. We've had several guests on who have talked about in the deep south that water can be one of those things that really, yeah, you can have, you know, swirling winds still that persist, but you know, maybe a third less of the time they swirl or they settle, sucking back to that water feature, whether it's a spring fed creek or it's a an oxbow on a river bank that, you know, warms up a little hotter or colder than all. And a lot of those oxbows tend to have like a little feeder creek. So that water's a little cooler and it kind of sucks down to that bottom more. Especially down here in Florida, we have if it's not blistering winds from a cold front, it starts swirling almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's frustrating when it's like that.
And it's like that a lot. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, Brett, am I wrong? What about in Alabama? Is it kind of the same thing? If you don't have that strong northeast, northwest, I don't like much out of the northwest. I feel like it starts swirling whenever it comes northwest.
I was scouting yesterday. We had a pretty strong, what was it? Probably about a north. Yeah, I'd say it was about a north, maybe northeast wind yesterday. I didn't look at the forecast. I'm just going off memory. But it was a steady, like coming across the water, blowing into the woods kind of thing. The thicker your vegetation, like I was saying, the cedar thickets, but any kind of thick woods, if you're on a field edge on the downwind side of the woods, it's going to swirl because it's coming through those trees and over top of those trees. And then there's a dead space where it swirls. And I've noticed with cedars, it will swirl and kick back into the woods if you sit on the downwind side, like on a field edge. So like on the map, it looks like a good wind, but you get there and it's going straight back into the thicket where the deer are bedded.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I don't think that ground versus tree, tree stand or saddle, I don't think that makes too much of a difference. Cause it's still going to mess you up more likely than not. In that situation,
I've got a couple coves that do that too, where the cove will the wind will come around the cove and you'll have a thicker vegetation kind of on the edge, and it almost feels like it catches that and just kind of whips up into that cove, and you end up with a swirl. Yeah. That you can't really predictively work with. So when hunting from the ground, you're moving a lot because you're getting stuff on camera. Do you implement a ghillie suit? Do you implement natural coverage? What's your thought there?
Natural cover and shade. I don't think people talk about shade enough. If it's available, if you're, you know, it depends on where you're at. A field edge is the best place to take advantage of shade, or hunting a clearing or a food plot, anywhere the deer is going to be in brighter light. If you got a thick bush of like briars or something, and there's a little hole underneath it where you can kind of sit back in there and stay in the shadows. Like, think if you're in the shade looking out into the sun, you can see clear as day. But if you're out in the sun looking into the shade, it looks kind of like a black hole. So it's a lot easier to blend in when you're in the shade, and have a backdrop is the other thing. Cause sometimes you don't have that shade available. So always have something behind you and preferably to your sides to blend into. I don't want too much in the front of me, especially with a bow, because I need to have room to shoot, you know, without the arrow or the limbs catching anything. But I also don't like to sit in a chair because I feel like it puts me up higher and more visible. Like, if I'm going to go any higher than sitting on the ground, then I'm just going to climb a tree, because I'd rather that than stick out like a sore thumb. But I mean, like a seat cushion's fine, but try to stay low. bigger, the bigger tree, the better. Break up the silhouette. A tree with multiple trunks is great. A tree that's got like briars growing all around the base is perfect. You got to think what's behind you, what's around you that you're blending into to break up your silhouette. And then if you do have shade available, use it.
So are you just sitting like Indian style on the ground? Or?
Usually, yeah. I'll stretch my legs every now and again.
Okay, because like I use a chair, but the height of this chair is only like 13 inches. So it's real low, and the legs sink in the ground usually an inch or two. And it's almost like a beach chair, how you're real low, but it's just enough where you can shoot, you know, without your knees being up in the way, and you're still low profile. So it's kind of what I've been going with. Because I'm not necessarily moving because I'm doing a lot of bow hunting from the ground. You know, if I had a gun, I'd probably do a whole lot more moving.
Yeah. I guess I should say, I shouldn't say a chair is bad. I just don't use it because I prefer to sit lower. They got those turkey hunting chairs that sit super low too. I've heard of people using them. Long as you got good cover and you're still, and being still is another big thing. That's the best really camo. And I've got to move a little bit, you know, manning the camera, but it's kind of one of those things where you got to have your eyes on the deer and say it puts its head down to eat or it looks the other way. And then I can mess with the camera and whatnot and get my bow ready. But, I like to sit low down personally. It depends on where you're at. You know, I've had places that just don't set up good to bow hunt from the ground because there's like no cover. Yeah. But I've also stumbled into, random situations where a deer just walks up on me and I'm just standing in the middle of nothing and shoot it. But I mean, that's not a tactic. That's just how it happens sometimes. Like I said, I was wearing a gray t-shirt a couple years ago and jumped some does off the bed and decided to sit down at this dead tree stump, just the like bottom 4 or 5 feet of a stump. And I'm in a t-shirt and I sit down just to see if they come back. Cause sometimes they'll do that. Sure enough, they got nosy and came back and, I shot one just sitting like that. And that's, like I said, that's not a tactic I always use. Like I don't expect to just sit out in the open and kill one. I try to have as much cover as possible.
Yeah. I think we, as a collective, find ourselves trying to hunt deer where deer are here in the deep south, where it's just really thick. And something we've really been noticing is how deer are sticking to cover where you can't hang a tree. The only way you can hunt it is from the ground. So that's where all this has, you know, started. And it's like, man, I want to hunt there. Man, I want to hunt there. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do it now. Just go out there and do it. And it's kind of stemmed from there. And it was, you know, it took me about 2 years, but I ended up shooting a really nice buck from the ground with my bow, you know, in one of those type of places. And super exciting when you do that. But the amount of deer that I've seen going in those type of places is just, it's just tremendous. It's just whole lot more deer than hanging it, you know, hanging in other spots where everybody else are hanging.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's one thing I learned early on was to stick around thick cover. That's where the deer feel safe is. They got browse, they got cover, they got shade.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was a time where I'd like write a spot off because I couldn't hunt it out of a tree, but I've sat on the ground on and off since I started. I killed my first deer from the ground with a 30-30 set up against the base of a big sugar maple. And he came in behind me at 5 yards. He was on the trail of a doe. He did not care. He looked at me, put his nose back on the ground, came around my left side at 8 yards. I hard shot him. So I guess I've been ground hunting since I started, but I guess there was a time when I would look at a spot and be like, I can't get up any trees in there. I wouldn't bow hunt it as much. I would gun hunt it.
Right. Yeah. I'm the crazy person in the group that just likes to bow hunt year round when everybody else is with a rifle.
All right.
That's just my thing.
Yeah, I understand that. I got I'll pick up a bow during gun season once in a while. There's a couple WMAs that are bow only, or I might be in an urban situation where it's not a good idea to shoot a rifle.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, when the guns come out, they stay out. And I also don't climb a tree near as much.
Well, what's your tactic come gun season? Like, what you just looking for deer sign, feet sign? Or are you hunting hills, like trying to sit on the side of hills where you can see? How does that play in with rut stuff as well?
Well, that's what I was going to say is muzzleloader season around here is like peak rut. That's the best time to catch a big one acting stupid. So I'm hunting all my rut spots during muzzleloader. And then I actually killed my buck for second day of rifle last year. But a lot of times I kill during muzzleloader if I'm going to kill one during the rut. And then later on into December, I'll start exploring some new areas or bouncing around, just doing some doe hunting or whatever. And I do a lot of my steeper hill country hunting late gun season where I can slip in. Again, I prefer windy days because those hardwood ridges are crunchy.
Maybe after a rain as well?
After or during a rain, yeah. Light okay. rain. I don't like hunting in the rain, but a light rain's perfect. Like a drizzle. But yeah, like late gun season, I'll get into some of the hills I'll still hunt quite a bit, especially if it's a new area that I haven't scouted. And then if I get to a spot where I want to hunt the rest of the afternoon or whatever, I'll sit down. But early gun season and muzzleloader, like early rifle, first week of rifle and the 2 weeks of muzzleloader before that, I'm buck hunting.
Are you looking for anything particular, like any benches or saddles or feed sign or just heavy trails or
thickets? Funnels, near thickets, downwind side of thickets, funnels between thickets, anything like anywhere you could either catch a buck scent checking a bedding area or just catch them chasing through. And honestly, I hunt a lot flatter terrain for deer than I do for turkey. So a lot of these spots are not like steep ridges or anything. I'll do a lot of my steeper ridge hunting, like I said, later in the season when I start exploring out some more. But it's mainly a little bit of terrain funnel, mainly like habitat type funnel, like vegetation, different types of, you know, woods, whatever, or just hunting the offside of a big bedding thicket where I know the deer are at.
Gotcha. What type of thickets are you finding? Like in your area, how would you describe those? Like for us, or like cutovers and pines?
We got a little bit of that. We got a little bit of that depending on where you're at. We got some swamps. And then especially southern Tennessee, you see a lot of pine plantations and cutovers. There's certain areas I see a lot of that, but mainly the thickets will be like, if you're near the water, it's going to be privet or honeysuckle, like invasive shrubs and stuff. Yeah. Or you may have a big patch of river cane or just young woods. Maybe like a lot of our public lands have old home places on them. And those, you know, used to be somebody's yard and it probably has privet and other stuff in it. A lot of times you'll see ivy growing up the trees, but old home places tend to be pretty thick. Just random vegetation. You'll get, in some of the creek bottoms, you get a lot of spice bush thickets, and I really don't like hunting in them because it's just a pain to walk through them. Same with privet. But deer love it, especially the privet. As invasive as it is, they'll get in there, bed in it, and they'll eat it. And then we got cedar thickets, cedar glades. We got a lot of limestone, cedar glades where it's just like you're not getting up in a tree because you'll be in the branches. You know, cedars are dense. You like even standing up, you can't see 10 yards, and you sit down and you can see 40 yards. Yeah. And that's what I got in my backyard. And we get that on all over Middle Tennessee, you see those cedar thickets. Anywhere there's a lot of limestone, you get those cedar thickets, and they really don't have any food for the deer. They're just shelter. They're And when it's hot out, they're a lot cooler because they're heavily shaded and there's no crunchy leaves. So they can, the deer can slide through a cedar thicket like a ghost.
You find them there in really rainy days or like stormy days, like in them cedars, like hunkering down?
I haven't really noticed a difference. When it's real heavy rain, I usually stay out of the woods because I got a camera and everything. Now I just like all the time, if there's a cedar thicket, they're going to use it, and it's not going to be for a food source, but it's they're going to bed in it and they're going to use it to travel quietly and undercover.
Yeah. I guess the only reason I asked that, because it reminds me of the pines down home. When you stand up, you can't see, but you get down on your knees or squat down, you can see through them.
Yeah. It's like a lot like pines. Yeah.
I find deer like to be in those when the big fronts are coming through or storms, they start gravitating to them because you can get in there right after that storm and they're all coming out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that is true. I haven't really noticed the difference or really paid attention, to be honest, but I have noticed they tend to, if they're around a cedar thicket, they're going to be in there a lot regardless. But yeah, but I like to hunt like my backyard, for example, big cedar thicket on the far side of the property and then a hay field. And, though I won't hunt in those cedars, I'll wait for them to come out into the field. And I do, there's one spot where it opens up where there's some big red oaks and ash and a couple spots actually where the cedar thicket opens up into some hardwoods. And that's where I got my tree stands. But you're still talking about a 20-yard shot tops because it's just a lot of undergrowth.
I didn't know privet was invasive. I'm over here Googling it. I feel like such an idiot. I thought privet was just
Chinese privet.
Yeah.
You gotta love it and gotta hate it. It's bad invasive around here, but the deer love it.
I don't know that I've ever seen it down here.
I don't know how far south it goes. It's everywhere here. And certain areas will have the bush honeysuckle, which is also invasive. And actually, my backyard's got a lot more bush honeysuckle than privet. And I don't know what the difference is. I think the privet definitely favors the creek bottoms and creek banks, you know, low areas. The bush honeysuckle, you'll see it more up on slopes or rockier areas. But they're both highly invasive.
Yeah, and evidently Florida has a bunch of it. I'm Florida.
You don't see it or just haven't noticed it?
Well, I mean, it might be by that I just haven't noticed it.
If you got a lot of it, you probably wouldn't, unless you're looking for it, you're just so used to seeing it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is here. But, deer absolutely love it. Sidetrack here, but privet is, you can't buy it from a landscape store anymore. It's illegal.
Really?
But that's how it got spread here, because it's a hedge. A lot of people call it hedge. And I got a buddy that works at a landscape place. He said he'll have people come in occasionally and be like asking for a privet because they want to plant a hedge. And he says, no, we're not allowed to sell that anymore, but you can go out back by the river and dig you one up.
I love that, man. Yeah, Brett, I wonder if this isn't that bush we saw out there on that peninsula area. You remember you and I walked out there, mm-hmm. and we saw all that browse on a bushy shrub.
Mm-hmm.
Dark blue, little small dark blueberries in the fall. Birds like it.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about because they grew all over in Alabama on the size of the roads and stuff.
Oh yeah.
That tree lines are on the edge. And you had to like peel through that just to get into the woods and places.
Dude, if you ever have to cut shooting lanes in the privet just to get a shot, do it right when you hunt. Cause I've had deer multiple times come in and eat on that fresh cut stuff. It'll put them right in your shooting lane. They'll stop and sniff around and start chewing on that branch that they couldn't reach before.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. I've killed a couple does that way.
Just don't do it on public.
Yeah, you're not supposed to cut on public. This was on private, but yeah.
This is all private advice. Don't get caught cutting. cut and shooting lanes. The old J-Bo, he was giving everybody the what's for about it in the polo group the other day about, you know, hedge trimmers and everything else that people were taking in their packs.
And I think it depends on the area, because I've heard of certain area managers that will be like, yeah, you can just cut small things, but don't cut any trees down. And then some people will probably just write you a ticket for like, you know, the smallest thing. I don't know. It depends on the public you're hunting. A lot of times I call to the person who's over that area would be the best way to go about it. Cause some people will let you cut, like just snip a little here and there so you can shoot. It just depends.
Yeah, I actually have it in writing somewhere from FWC where I reached out to them. I'm like, hey, this doesn't make sense. The rules say that I can't do anything. Like, I can't touch any like live species. I have to leave it like it is. And I was like, what am I supposed to do when I climb a tree? Am I supposed to, like, with my climber, can I not, like, knock off the branches as I climb? They're like, no. The rules really have, it's not about, like, what we don't want you to do is cutting down trees. Yeah. If you're climbing the tree and you need to snip a branch to where you have a shooting lane, no one really cares about that. The intent here is that people aren't cutting shooting lanes. And I'm like, cool. I'm really glad I have that on email. You know, because I'm not out there
in case you get a warden. Yeah.
That's
how it goes. I think that's how a lot of them will see it. I have seen people cut bad shooting lanes where they were cutting whole trees down and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this dude did it a couple of years ago. I'm in a gap. There's a little ford where you got to walk through this creek where the tractor path goes from one cornfield to another cornfield. And the corn was still standing, and there was a chinkapin oak dropping heavy, the earliest I've seen one drop, right in this gap between cornfields. And there's a tree tucked up behind a big wall of privet. And it's just in a little, like, you can get up in the saddle behind the tree and you're just in a pocket in the shadows, like, perfect setup. Well, I come back a few days later and the corn is fresh cut, and I'm going to hunt that gap because I saw a couple does in the corn, but they were staying in the corn. So they cut it, and I go back out there, and I get to that gap and I look up, and all the privets cut away. The whole tree trunk is exposed, and there's a guy 12 feet up it in a summit climber just hanging out like a sore thumb in the wide open. And his truck wasn't there because his buddy dropped him off. So I didn't know he was there. I didn't know anybody was hunting there. I just walked up on him. I looked up and he's just hanging out there. All the privet that was all the cover I had for that tree was, he just cut the whole thing out, just ruined it. So I was like, hey, do you mind if I go to the back of the field? He's like, sure, go for it. So I go back there and proceeded to walk up on a group of deer and get busted. Deer were already out in the field. But yeah, I've seen people do stupid stuff, cutting whole trees down, cutting giant shooting lanes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the kind of thing you'd get a ticket for.
You know, this is taking us way back, but you talked about shade. And I think that is a huge component to this. If you're a turkey hunter, you know all about the importance of shade, right? Like, we talk about it because movement is hyper-focused when it comes to turkey hunting. But if you've ever if you've ever been in one of those situations where you can put the sun to your back, man, you feel like you're just invincible. You put the sun to your back and you can be tucked up underneath a little tree or a branch or something, man, I swear you could do a jig under that thing and most things wouldn't see you.
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple spots like that, especially field edges. That's the best place to take advantage of the sun and the shade is get up in a hedgerow and waller you out a little hole in there where you got maybe one or two openings to shoot through, but you're just in the deep shade. And like, you could wave at a deer and it wouldn't see you. I mean, like, a lot of my scouting is done from the hedges in the shadows watching fields. Like, in the summer when I'm just watching bean fields, I'm just staying in the shadows and I can walk around and hold my camera up, move around, get my camera situated. I mean, a lot of times the deer don't even have a clue I'm there. Now, as soon as I come out of that hedgerow into the edge of the field where I get some light on my face, that's when they start picking up their heads and looking at me.
Yeah.
You mentioned something before we hit the record on podcast that you've been out scouting. And you have a couple places picked out from the ground. And I kind of wanted you to talk about that, kind of break that down, because it piques my interest because it's early season. and you're trying to hunt from the ground, and I just really want to hear about that.
Well, that's kind of those spots I was talking about. It's kind of like what I was just saying. They're just little pockets on the edge of a field. And the one that I went and scouted yesterday, I just had to make sure I had a couple spots to sit. It was on a funnel. It's on the corner of a field where they funnel through, and there's a creek crossing. So they're always coming through this gap, this corner of this field. And the deer are going to be out in the open, in the wide open. And I'm going to be just kind of tucked back, not on the edge of the field. I'll be tucked back about 4 or 5 yards into the woods, up in the shrubs and the river cane or whatever's growing there. So I'm, like the deer are going to be coming by, 10 yards from the edge of the shrub line, but I'm going to be another 5 yards back in. So if that would be like a 15 yard shot. So you got to factor in the extra distance, but I like to tuck back in there if I got to, wherever the best cover is, a good broad tree, preferably, and stay in the shadows. And you can get away with a lot.
Yeah, to the line of sight right there, and at a kind of the peripheral being that far back in there. So as long as you're not doing backflips by air, you should be pretty.
And that's
good.
Another thing I just thought of that's important with that kind of setup. You want to make sure the shrubs or the, whatever's growing on the edge of the field, you want to make sure the vegetation's not so thick you can't see a deer coming. Because if you got one shooting lane in front of you and it's a perfect chip shot, but I like to be able to at least look through the bushes and see a deer coming down the trail. And then, so I can get my bow ready. And when they step into that opening, I can just pop them.
Yep.
So it depends on the spot I was, checking on yesterday is just set up perfect, but some spots are a lot harder to find a good setup.
Are you not especially worried about your ground scent there in that situation?
Yeah, well, it depends. In that spot, not so much. Because it's like multiple use public land. There's, deer kind of used to smelling that people have been there.
Gotcha.
But not that you're completely covered. I mean, you can still get busted that way. But if they come into the corner of that field, I should get a shot before they get a chance to bugger about ground scent. And I can actually, the way I can approach that spot is from the field. So they might not even get to my ground scent before I get a shot.
And so are you expecting the deer, is that the one where the gap is? You're expecting them to come from a certain direction or a certain side of the field?
Yeah, they come out in this corner from a creek crossing.
And you come in from the opposite side. So you're shooting them before they could get past you and get to your ground scent.
Exactly. And I'd say open hardwoods is probably the worst for bow hunting on the ground. That's where you just got to be still, because you're not going to get a lot of that undergrowth and cover and shade. You're just going to have to pick the biggest tree trunk you can find if you're going to be bow hunting in open big woods. Get the biggest tree trunk you can find to break your silhouette and sit still.
Feel like you really need to have the deer dialed in to do that in the big woods setting like that, or have like the perfect
situation.
Oh yeah, a blowdown's great cover. That's a good point. When I rifle hunt in the big woods, I've had stuff happen that makes me think I should probably try bow hunting more in open woods like that, just to see what I can get away with. Because, I've been rifle hunting and had deer at 10 yards, I don't know how many times, in wide open woods. And a lot of times I'm standing, not even sitting down. But with a rifle, a lot of times they're facing at you. Like, they're iffy shot angles for a bow. With a rifle, you just put it on them and shoot. So I guess there's that factor. But there's been situations where I could have easily killed. And there's been situations where I have killed in wide open hardwoods with a bow, like walking up on those does that were bedded and they came back and got nosy. I'm trying to think. I thought there was another situation that came to mind, but I can't remember now. But oh yeah, that buck I grunted in several years back in the rain. I was standing up, and he's or I may have sat down because I saw him going out to another property, and I grunted him, and he came in on a string, and I mean, I'm sitting there broadside, where he's standing broadside. I'm sitting there at 20 yards in wide open woods, and he's just head bobbing me, and there was a tree blocking the vitals, saved him.
So, are you calling a lot when you're on the ground and moving, like rattling, grunting, or are you only grunting maybe when you see a deer and you're trying to?
I only grunt when I see a deer. I rarely blind grunt. I mean, I've called in several grunting, but I see them cruising. It's always when they're out, like they look like they're on a mission. They're just walking through the woods, but they're not coming your way. That's when the grunt seems to work for me. And then I'll randomly rattle here and there during the early rut. And I've never rattled anything big. I've rattled in young bucks. I mean, I know there's people out there that rattle in giants every year. I don't know how they do it. Snort wheeze. If a buck's got a doe with him, I'll snort wheeze. But other than that, I don't call much. Usually I got to have eyes on a deer to call to him.
Gotcha.
That especially in hardwoods where you don't have that hard edge to put to your back, right? Like,
yeah.
I do a lot of calling year round. I can't convince myself that it hurts me. But I only do it whenever I feel like I can put something to my back to prevent them from getting downwind of me, which I think,
yeah, that's a good point.
Goes back to what you asked me. Do I hunt a lot of water access? Yeah. For that reason right there, I can put my back.
There's water on your back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a huge plus, being able to have water on your back so they can't get downwind.
Or that,
just the quiet approach too on the water is good.
Yeah. I've actually had a lot of success rattling and grunting, or mainly rattling, like kind of blind rattling. But I'm actually in the thickets, like pine thickets and stuff on the ground. And I'm kind of set up in a way. I guess I'll describe it like this without trying to give away too much, like a kind of like a SMZ behind me, and I'm
you're not giving it. Anything away. That describes every pine plantation in the South,
right? But
and nobody gonna find your spot.
Just say I come through a SMZ, and there's a lot of hunter sign in that spot because that's where the trees are to climb.
Yeah,
and there's kind of like pines and thicken on both sides, and just from doing some scouting through the years, but I actually get up out, cross the SMZ, and go out in the pines about 50, 60, maybe 70 yards. And I have a spot that I like to set up where I have five different trails all converging in one spot where they're all crossing through. And I've had a lot of success rattling, and I've not to say a deer hadn't come behind me and busted me and I didn't know it, but I had a lot of deer just come running in on me, and none of them's ever come from behind me. They will come from every different direction, and I believe it's because they don't want to swing into them hardwoods where they know people are hunting. So I'm using that as in my back wall where they're not going to come from.
That's crazy.
But they're coming from all the other directions. And being that you're in their bedding area, it seems more realistic. And you're on the ground, so you can make ground noise and hit trees and, you know, all of that stuff.
And is that young pines? Is that like where you can't climb a tree? Is that young pines?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's enough.
You can sit down and see. And comfortably, you know, if you stand up, you got to weave through some limbs and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how old they are, but, you know, it's thick. You can't, I mean, if you get elevated at all, you can't see anything.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a good spot. They're safe in those pines. And I think what you said about them, they won't swing into that SMZ because they know that's where the people are. That's a great. I've never actually tried to use hunting pressure as a backdrop for the wind, but that's a great idea.
Cold blooded stuff right there, man.
That's you know, I've used that and had a lot of luck doing it. And you know, a few years ago, I used to think calling didn't work. Bow hunting from the ground was probably near about impossible. And I just listened to something that somebody else said, and, you know, talk about taking two things in the off season that you feel like you're weak in or struggle in, and make that a priority through the off season and next deer season. And that was the two I picked out. And the last 2 years, I've really leaned into it and found more success now than I ever have from doing that.
That's pretty cool. I like that tactic, using the SMZ instead of, since you don't have water, using something where they're not. Still, I mean, I've heard of deer swinging wide of trail cameras, like that, like where they won't go in front of it because it'll flash the infrared. I haven't seen it in person. I read, now this may be made up, but I kind of believe it. I read it somewhere online. Somebody was saying they were tracking a wounded buck at night, and they were, I don't know, he might not have been at night, I don't remember, but he jumped up. He was still alive, and he's going down this path on the edge of the woods, and all of a sudden he just cuts into the woods and then cuts back out. He went cut into the woods where there was a trail camera on a tree to go behind it. That's, I don't know if that's true. I just read that, like, and I've heard from a lot of people that a certain deer will avoid that infrared.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, deliberately go around it and won't walk in front of it. Now, like I said, I haven't seen it in person, but I mean, I've heard it from enough credible people. Most of my cameras are black flash now. And it only takes that one deer. It's like, that's most right. Deer don't care. Like, I've had deer sit there and just stare at it and have like 10 pictures of them staring at it. But, you know, certain deer are really weird about stuff like that.
Yeah. I really believe that, like, your mature deer in general, like, especially bucks, they have their own personality just like we do. Some don't care, and some are just wigged out. Like, I really think that you have a few different types of mature bucks. You have some that want to keep tabs on you, which are in your overlooked spots, hanging out by the parking lot. And then you have those bucks who will put up with no human scent, and they're the ones that are deep in the woods where nobody's at. I mean, I really think that, because I see it all the time, year after year, it seems that, like.
Yeah, that's true. That reminds me of a story I read from, I think from the NDA website. You know, they do a lot of GPS color studies, and they had this buck. They had this little tiny scrub rack buck, but he was 5.5
years old. We call those water bucks.
Yeah. No, this, yeah, an old, old.
But he's five, rat. So never mind.
No, he wasn't that little. I didn't even see the horns on that one.
You just thought it was a white dot on the wall.
It's like the one up here on my wall.
Yeah.
But no, he was like just a basket rack, but an older deer. And he lived in a swamp, like it was up north somewhere where they got into big cattail swamps. And he never came out of there he never came out of the swamp, but he would show up in one certain corner of like a, I don't remember, CRP or something. You could probably look up this story on their website, but the guy killed him and turned in the radio caller, and they were like, where'd you kill him at? And he was like, oh, I don't want to say, you know? And they were like, well, did you kill him on the corner of this CRP right here? And he's like, how did you know that? And they're like, because that's the only place that buck ever would have been during the daytime. He was super reclusive, and he wasn't even a big rack deer. Just did not like to be around people.
Yep, his personality.
Yep.
I'd never have killed that deer. If it doesn't get up and move during daylight and be stupid, I don't stand a chance, man.
We all count on that sometimes. I don't kill a lot of bucks early season. The ones I have killed were younger bucks. Nicer rack, younger bucks. I rely quite a bit on the rut for those bigger ones to act a little dumber.
Same.
And then in the meantime, for the rest of the season, I'm just whacking does. Yeah. Whacking does, watching trail cameras, and trying to keep an eye on where maybe a good buck might be. But I don't start like I don't start passing on all the does until about November, and even then, when if I'm scouting and a doe walks up on me, I might blast her. It just depends on the day. I did kill last year, so I normally kill my good bucks during muzzleloader. Last year, I didn't see I only had one buck I really wanted to kill, and I didn't see him until rifle. But I did kill two does during muzzleloader when I said I wasn't going to, because it was one of them. There were good bucks in the area that I had seen from the road, but they were on someone else's property, and there's this little bit of public that backs up to it, and so I was going for them, but this doe and fawn were always in there, and so I get there and I sneak in real quiet. Sure enough, there they are eating under the red oaks, and so I just sit down and watch them. I don't want to blow them out of there just yet because I know there might be a good buck in there, so I'm sitting down watching them, and they come right up to me, and the wind swirls, and she picks her head up and starts stomping and blowing. So I had to give it to her there and end that pretty quick. And then there was another one where I was on the boat, and I pull up in a holler. I'm like, I'm gonna sit here for 10 minutes and if just to see if anything shows up, and then I'm gonna go hunt this field, down the river. So I sit there for like 3 minutes, and a doe comes off the hill and blasted her. Well, and then I loaded her up and went and hunted the field. But normally, yeah. I try to, if it's like a real quick situation there, like the first one, the one that was blowing at me, like I'm expecting the buck, or hoping for, I was hoping for one of those bucks to slip through there chasing a doe. But if I got this doe standing at 20 yards blowing and blowing, I'm screwed. I'm just going to shoot. Like, the hunt's already kind of messed up at that point.
Yeah, you blow, you go.
Yeah, that's my policy. I don't put up with that. I had one blow at me. It was peak rut, like November 13th, and it was the best day for rut activity last year. I had chasing from daylight till dark, mostly younger bucks, couple tempting bucks, but they weren't the one I was looking for. But I had this one doe at one point. That caught me moving or something, and she stood there and stomped and blew, and it had everything in me not to shoot that deer, but I thought my shooter was going to show up, so I didn't. She got very lucky that day, and my shooter did not show up, but I killed him there like a week later. So normally I don't. If the doe's going to stand there and stomp and make a scene, she ain't going to make it out alive if I can help it.
You're just convincing me to never pass a deer right there, because there's no point, man. It just ends in heartbreak is what I'm hearing Catman say.
Oh, no. Well, what's your deer population like? How many does you allowed to kill?
10 in Georgia and 2 in Florida.
Only but, 2 but, in Florida.
But that's the dumbest rule ever, because there's freaking does everywhere here, man.
I bet there are. We can kill 3 a day, and we've got does everywhere.
Dude, you could kill 2 bucks a day every day of the deer season in Florida for like 30 years. You want to talk about an out of whack buck to doe ratio? Come to Florida. Bam. It is ridiculous.
Bam. Too many bucks for too many does?
Does.
Too many does.
You could shoot 2 bucks a day for 30 years.
Yeah.
Unlimited amount of bucks, basically.
No point restrictions until like
That's the actual limit.
It was until 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah.
You say their buck limit was like our doe limit, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yeah,
and no antler restrictions. So you just have people out there just waylaying anything that walked.
Jeez, 2 bucks a day.
And I'm not a big buck hunter, but I can tell you right now, that's not good for your population, because what it does is it spreads your fawn drop out so heavily that your predation goes up, your recruitment goes down, and so you just perpetuate what you already have there. I mean, we've got to get control of our doe population. I've got a couple spots I can go, and I have routinely counted 20 to 30 does. Can't shoot them.
Oh, yeah. They need to do something about that. So I got spots where I'll see 20 to 30 does, and if I kill a couple, I'll kill 2 in one sitting, and well, that's not a drop in the bucket some of these places. My backyard's got a healthy population. It's not overrun like that, but a lot of places are.
Yeah.
I wouldn't kill first year I lived here, I killed like five deer, but I wouldn't do that again because it doesn't need it. Like one, maybe two does off this place in a season is plenty. But then there's places where I could kill five does in the same spot and it wouldn't make a difference.
Yeah, I bet you that one spot, I'm not going to name drop it, but I bet you, and it's not the one that Brett's even thinking about. That one's crazy too. But the one I've got elsewhere in Florida, I almost named it right there. Elsewhere, I bet you I could go in there and shoot my two deer tags. I could take you and Brett, and I could take Ron. Well, Ron would just look at him; he wouldn't actually shoot him. But we could take Pat and like three dog hunters, and we could all fill our tags every year. And I don't think we'd put a dent in that population there. I mean, it's impossible. And they're in areas where bow hunting is a pain in the butt, anyways.
Can you gun hunt?
No, it's only during archery season. Mm-hmm. So no. you can only kill does during archery season, and you're only allowed two of them.
Wow.
Yeah,
that makes no sense.
It's not doing anything.
No.
Yeah, that's I mean, it is possible to take too many does if you're not. I mean, if you're being foolish, but we got three a day in a pretty large portion of Tennessee. I mean, we got several different units. Unit L's were, you know, most of Middle Tennessee and West Tennessee, except for the CWD zone, is mm-hmm. Unit L. And as CWD zone is just as liberal as Unit L. I mean, even three a day for the whole season, that adds up to 300-something deer a person as a bag limit. The people don't want to fool dragging a doe out most of the time. I don't care. I'll do it. But, like, nobody's going to kill their three a day, and if they do, it's like once in a while. So you still got areas that get overpopulated. Because, I mean, just because you can kill three a day doesn't mean people are going to actually do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like the depredation tags up in Indiana with Jim Reiser, farmers got like 5,000 acres. He had 36 permits this year. And leases some of his farms to Jim and leases some to a couple other guys. So there's people actively hunting these farms, but they just want to kill a buck. And the farmer's like, hey, part of the deal when I lease it to you to hunt is you got to kill some deer, like kill so many deer for me. And they're not doing it. So Jim is the only one. Jim and I'll come up and hunt with him for a weekend and we'll go and just start shooting deer because the farmer asked for it. Because the hunters weren't, you know, they made a deal with, you know, the farmer made a deal with them like, hey, you need to kill so many deer. And they still weren't because they just were buck hunting.
And that's a gun hunt, you said?
Why are you itching over there?
That's my trigger finger. You know, I'm just, you know, just, itchy. You know.
There's a, yeah, we were hunting with rifles. I don't know. Does Florida do anything like that?
Hell no. I mean, they do, but not like in, not like most Midwest states. It's,
you don't have a lot of like ag fields down there?
I mean, in certain parts of the state, but not really. Generally speaking, sugar is kind of one of our bigger exporters. I think, isn't there a place down by Split Shot where they grow like a bunch of corn or something like that, or hay or something? Brett, there's something, no somebody idea. Down there where they're like we produce like some unbelievable amount of fill in the blank, and I can't remember what it is, but. As a whole, no. Florida doesn't have like good soil. It's all sandy, acidic soil by and large.
Is a sugar cane yeah. is your big yeah. is your big crop? Is yeah. Do deer even eat that?
I don't think so.
You can find a okay amount of ag land kind of along North Florida, kind of on the border of Alabama, maybe Georgia.
Maybe edit this
it's
podcast.
It's not much land.
Yeah, our number one production is, can you believe it, oranges. Outside of that,
no, tomatoes, Florida, no way.
Yeah, cattle,
alligators.
Yeah, yeah. We produce more trees than we do oranges. If you can believe that.
Do you all have flamingos, or are you too far mm-hmm. north? You do.
Oh, like, do I have them? I thought you meant the state of Florida.
Well, I mean, like where you're at in Florida. No,
no, I'm in South Florida.
Okay. I couldn't remember if you were Florida or South Georgia.
It's a joke. Where I live isn't really Florida. Like, it's just kind of like South Georgia. It's
the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Palmettos and sand, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. alligators. Yeah, well, reason I asked about flamingos, I saw online just the other day that people were seeing a few flamingos up here in Middle Tennessee. Like they got like a storm pushed them off course or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's weird. I've never seen one up here, but apparently some people the were hurricane. Seeing them.
That hurricane, hurricane Lee. Yeah, hurricane. No, Idalia. Idalia was what pushed them up there. We had them up here briefly too. They got scattered everywhere. That storm just kind of went up that west coast and just pushed them. Yeah. Yeah, hurricanes can do some funny things when it comes to animals, man. There's an island west of me that has sandbar deer, basically tiny elk. And when Hurricane Michael,
what are those?
Came, huh?
What are those?
Sandbar.
Sandbar deer.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's like a tiny little elk. It's like 300-400 pound elk. But they love swamps, and they're from Southeast Asia.
Oh, okay.
And there's a little limited quota hunt you can put in for, and it'd be a fun hunt for you, actually. I think you'd actually get a kick out of that, dude.
Sounds interesting.
Cat 5 hurricane comes through. Yeah, he's going to need a big boat for that, for sure. That bay is crazy. But the Cat 5 hurricane flooded the island, pushed them on the mainland. So people are shooting sandbar deer in the backyard, dude.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no season on them. If it shows up in your yard, you can just shoot it whenever.
Yep.
They're exotic.
Yep. Not native. You can go down to Miami with a blow dart gun to shoot iguanas in downtown.
Oh, yeah. I know you can shoot iguanas all over the place. Well, they're invasive, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything in Florida at this point is invasive.
Yeah. The pythons, iguanas, people. Chameleons, people.
Like a jungle.
Yeah. People are invasive here, too.
Yeah, Joey Bell is always giving us hell. They're gonna be pissed you talk so much about Tennessee, because they're always trying to get people to quit coming to Tennessee, and there you are talking about
I saw you come on and give it a try. I see a lot of people complain, oh, there's people everywhere, this terrible. Like, all right, go on, you tried it, go back home and don't come back. Let me hunt my spots.
Hey, I started this thing by saying that it was heavily pressured, Joey. I did my part.
Well, it is. You gotta be willing to move with the crowd. If you're not, like, if you don't like seeing other hunters, you're not going to enjoy it.
That's right. There's no point in even going, is what he's saying. Well, dude, listen, I appreciate the heck out of you. I'm looking forward to deer content, man. Dude, this is this time of year I start consuming the hell out of stuff. Where can people find all the hunts you're gonna have this year?
Oh, they'll be on my main channel, Catman Outdoors on YouTube.
There it is.
Yeah, I have a side channel. I probably won't post much for deer season on that channel, but I do have a DIY channel as well.
Do you
for
really?
Side projects. Yeah, I did my bow fishing boat build back in January. I posted on there.
And then, what's it called?
Catman DIY.
Oh.
It's you can find it on my main channel. I think I have a link to it. But either way, it's just projects, stuff that I work on the side. I don't post a whole lot on it right now.
Yeah.
But I got a couple ideas in the works that would go there. But any kind of building anything, or you know, how to do that, how, like, I still put some how to stuff on the main channel, like how to film your deer hunts, because I feel like that's more relevant to the main channel. But like any kind of side projects will go on the DIY channel.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, I would recommend anybody. Yeah, Catman has an oak identifier, and I reference that all the time. Like probably every year, kind of looking
oak
at
identifier.
It. Yeah, with the leaves, gotcha. The bark, acorns. Mm-hmm. I forget the technical name of the page, but I refer to that every year and look at it.
I will say, for anyone down where y'all are at, like Florida, South Georgia, Southern Alabama, there's going to be some species of oak that I didn't cover that don't grow up here that you'll have down there.
Yeah.
So you're not, it's not an all inclusive identification guide, but for most of the Eastern United States, it'll have all your most common trees. I think I got like 21 species in there right now, I think. So it'll cover a lot of them.
What's the name of that page?
It's on my website, catmanoutdoors.com. It's just called, you go to the tab on top. It says Woodsman's Corner, and there'll be, you'll see it. It'll say Oak Tree Identification Guide, I think is what it's called.
OK.
And I've I got the video form on YouTube as well, and it will have a link to the website with the where you can scroll through and click on different trees.
Because if I'm not mistaken, Walter, when we found them oaks, we were like, we wasn't exactly sure what they were. I think we kind of referred back to that as well. That's what I was looking at for sure.
We both pulled it up on our phones. We found Schumert oaks. I've never seen them anywhere around here, and I tell people we found Schumert, and they can't believe it. We went and
pulled up. Deer's eating on them right now.
Really?
They squirrels early.
Well, they're not dropping ripe ones yet, but the squirrels or the wind have knocked a few green ones out, and I hung a trail camera. And
we found that.
Just today, I hung a camera yesterday, and today I've had a doe and two fawns in there all day with their nose on the ground.
Sucking them up.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we found last year. Mm-hmm. When we went in the woods this time of year.
Yeah, and it was first week of October is when I got on them right there consistently.
By October, they're usually falling good. But you have some that don't fall till December. So they're a good long-term food source there. If you're looking to plant...
That's cool.
If you're looking to plant oak trees on your property, Schumert oaks, one of the top picks I would choose.
Big old acorns too. I mean, them jokers are freaking huge.
They'll grow up on a rocky ridge, and they'll grow in the swamp, or they won't grow in the water, but they'll grow right next to the water. So they're very adaptable, and some of them drop real early, some of them drop real late, and if you get a bumper crop, the deer won't be able to eat them all. I mean, I've had years where the turkeys had them in their crop in turkey season. A bumper crop here. There was actually a couple years ago, a buddy of mine killed a jake going up to roost on this big hardwood ridge, and I think there were northern red oaks up there. Apparently, there had been a bumper crop the year before because we cut this crop open, and it was nothing but whole acorns and clover, stuffed full. And that was in April. So if there's a good bumper crop of red oaks, it'll feed the critters for a long time.
I'm curious. I'm going to watch these because everything I saw in your video and read about the Schumert is they have like a trickle crop, a steady crop, a heady crop, and then it just kind of wanes back off. There's that bell curve. And last year, those jokers never really rained acorns. They didn't. It was a pitter patter. Periodically, you'd hear them going. And you told me, because I sent you a message and I asked you about Schumert oaks, and you said they'll drop till December. And there's a pretty good patch of them. I'm actually really surprised.
Yeah, a little pocket.
Yeah, like what, 15, 20 trees all up and down that little hillside right there. And I kept going back, like, hey, let's see if they're there in December. Hey, let's see if they weren't. They had dropped in. I'd say by middle October they were dropped out. So I'm really curious, because if I keep up tabs on that, then in the coming years you could have one of those food sources, because come December here, December, January, that's our rut. And you want to talk about a prime food source, it's right there adjacent to bedding too. So, your bucks can keep tabs on does, but also have a high quality food source. And I never get a photo of a single human in this area. It's kind of like the trifecta of fun right there. And there's white oaks not far down the ridge too, so it's gonna be fun, man.
I like that good mix of white and red oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I like when the oaks are isolated like that, because you get in the big woods in the hill country around here, it's like solid hardwoods as far as the eye can see, and it's 50% mm-hmm. white oaks and like 25% red oaks, and then you got your hickories and poplars and stuff, but there's certain areas around here, especially on the western highland rim, which is just west of the Nashville Basin, you get areas that's like white oak dominated. I mean, just millions of them, like, and there's a bumper crop 2 years ago, I think, and they're just leftover acorns. They could, like, the squirrels and deer and everything couldn't put a dent in them, there were so many.
Wow.
Now that a year like that, where your whole ridge is nothing but white oaks and every one of them is loaded to the brim, mm-hmm. Just forget hunting acorns, find where they're bedded and try to hunt right on top of them.
Well, dude, I appreciate you. Like I said, I really appreciate you taking some time out your day. I'd love to hunt with you one day soon. Tennessee is on our list. You know, we're trying to focus really hard on the core South, the deep South, but Tennessee, we came up there and turkey hunted this past year and had an absolute blast. And I think we're going to do that again. We're going to come up this spring, turkey hunt, and then try and deer hunt the following fall. So I'd love to link up with you at some point, but,
yeah, let me know.
Yeah, we got a little bit of housekeeping, though, to do here. We got sidetracked. We dove right into the meat and potatoes of this. So we're going to give some love to some of the brands who make this possible. First and foremost, that is Tethered. Catman is a tethered aficionado, but only during archery season. Otherwise, he's sitting his butt on the ground.
Rifle hunting out of a little bit.
It
works great for rifle hunting. I just get lazy and sit on the ground or I want to scout. Yeah, I use my saddle up in a tree quite a bit, too. not as much,
that's right. So we want to say thanks to Tethered. We will be giving away one of their carbon fiber predator platforms just as soon as they come out, so you guys stay tuned for that. That's going to be an awesome giveaway. Join or die knives, we are going to be giving away, gotta wait till next episode, sorry, I just decided we're not going to talk about two giveaways back to back. That, and I haven't quite decided on the color scheme of the knife. So we are going to be giving away a knife in the month of September leading into October to kick off gun season. It's going to be a sweet package. It's a field package. You're going to absolutely love it. So stay tuned with them. Use the promo code SOCOHUNT to get 10% off your order if you're looking to buy a lifetime knife, a knife that's going to be there for generations. And obviously, Bowtech. Bowtech is producing some of the finest bows out there. Their diamond brand is amazing. It is an absolute gem of a value. And so we want to say thanks to them for partnering with us, as well as the Patreon members. Go check out, if you're listening to this right now, go check out the Live from the Fire episode series. It's a live journal series that we're doing. At least one episode a week will go on the main feed. The remaining 2 to 3 will go to the private Patreon feed. And you're going to be able to live the moments right there with us. The highs, the lows, the moment that I start squealing with excitement when I finally get to shake Catman's hand, that'll all be captured right there in that journal series. So I'm going to put a pin in that because that's a lot of advertisement all right there at the end of the episode. But thank you so much for tuning in this far. Go check out Catman's shirt website, buy a shirt from him, support him because he's putting some awesome content out there for you to consume all year long. And until next time, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.